Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Questions of the Force. I'm excited for questions and hopefully answers. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Katnab Suck. Sometimes I don't have the answers, but I do love trying to get to those questions and answer the heart of the question.
It is really interesting that we've decided for right now to call this Questions of the Force. We don't acknowledge answers. So what if we did an episode sometimes where we're just like, here's 87 questions. Who knows? No attempt to answer.
87 questions, but no one answering.
Well, we'll get into doing those kind of podcasts that are the artsy avant-garde podcasts. All questions, no answers.
Well, you and I love Star Wars tone poems. We'll just do a podcast episode that's a tone poem, man.
Yeah, it'll just start off, what if Yoda, and then nothing else. That's just it. Anyway, we want to let you know that, as always, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Mission to Disaster by Justina Ireland, the latest High Republic adventure. We're going to be diving into that one soon. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. You get an audiobook and it helps us out, but there is still more, Ken.
We do have another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. If I sing it, you'll remember it better. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Mini Book of Lightsabers. It is exactly what it's advertised to be, a little book of lightsabers that I love so much, I've had to move away from my desk, lest I read it during the show and get distracted. Again, use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. There you go.
Yeah, that is a great one. A great one. The little mini book of lightsabers. And I actually did use this code to get a present for my wife. It works. So check that out. Along with the mini book of lightsabers, we're going to dive into our questions and even answers. As always, we get two questions from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. Our first question is from Twitter and from Daniel Mormack. Daniel says, I think we all agree that the use of the Force exhausts one. Does it also age certain species? This is a very fun, very nice direct question. I love this topic about the Force's effect on the physical bodies of Force users. I want to start just with the first side of this, Ken. I think we all agree that the use of Force exhausts one. Do you like that? Do you agree with that? And do you like that concept in Star Wars?
I love that concept. That is a great question to focus on. I love that. And I don't think I've always thought that was the case. Definitely didn't grow up. Even after video games and you'd smash the X button, you have to wait for your Force juice to fill back up on that meter, right? That never translated to Star Wars for me. I think it's a realistic take. I think it's something that makes the powers and the Force skills you have, it makes it even more valuable to me. It makes it a resource you can't just exhaust with wild abandon and no thought. And I enjoy that. And it pops up more and more, I think, in Star Wars, unless I'm completely wrong and missing some stuff in the past. But just, you know, Grogu taking a nap is not only cute, it's realistic to me. And I like it.
It's like running a marathon. You can do it, but you're going to nap with a Rancor. That's just truth. Yeah, I think I think it's been in more modern canon recently. I think the very big idea of the Force projections in Last Jedi causing, you know, great, great effort, right? The Kylo setting up the effort would kill you, and the effort indeed ending Luke's life on this physical plane. And then he gets to walk into the Force, into a new horizon. But then also they're like scattered throughout lots of places. I think there's a High Republic moment in particular where Vanestra Rowe is really thinking and talking about it. And there's a couple ideas that I really like about it. I like the idea that, it connects to Yoda's quote to me of being luminous beings. We are not this crude matter. In this idea that the Force is cosmic, right? Anything is possible through the Force, but we are funneling that through our crude matter as Force users, you know, and we can only, you know, process, so much power through our bodies. Right. Yeah. And for me, it was also something that I always kind of, played around with is a lot is a young adult, as I was watching Empire Strikes Back on VHS a lot, when Yoda is saying, like, no different between lifting stones and the ship, it's only different in your mind. And I think I grew up for a while just like, oh, if you just that there truly isn't a difference, right? Like, you just get hung up on size, right? And that the greatest of all Force users could go, oh yeah, I move a pebble, or I shift a planet away from one sun to an entirely different sun. Same thing. And I was like, there's a part of me that was like, I like that philosophically, but it never gelled because like Yoda's like no different. And then he concentrates pretty hard.
Yeah.
To move that ship, right? He's not just like flick his wrist and it flies over and is like, and he does like a badass pose. Like, what's the problem, Luke? You know, he very slowly, mindfully concentrates. He puts effort into moving the X-Wing. So for me, this idea that anything is possible through the Force, but there are scales and it does matter kind of how much energy you are processing through your own physical body.
Yeah, that Yoda moment's great. And there's perhaps an example of it very early on in our Star Wars upbringing where it's like Yoda kind of hit a personal high on his bench press, but it took a toll. It took a toll. I even think he's kind of, that is why you... Oh, fail. Oh, I'm going to need a Gatorade. Like, I totally think that's there. And I just, you know, as a kid, you're right. You just don't focus on it. You focus on other things.
in your headcanon now, given Grogu's great nap, and understandably Grogu is a toddler, but Yoda is an old man of whatever kind. When Luke leaves Dagobah and Yoda says, no, there is another. Do you think the next second is him saying, lie down, I have to, Kenobi?
Yes, yes. Yes, it is. It's like my cool down. I did not replenish the electrolytes or midichlorians.
I need force electrolytes is pretty great. So, okay, we wanted to be sure to examine what we're thinking about Daniel's great observation that the force exhausts one. Now let's go to the second part, the explosive part of the question. Mm. Does it also age certain species? Do you think it ages species in general, and do you think specific species are more susceptible to being aged by extreme force use?
It's possible. It could age them. It could tire them out. We need to get the Purgles' take on this. How tired are they? And are they look a lot older than they are? This leads it away maybe to some Obi-Wan jokes or even Anakin, Darth Vader jokes, right? I mean, I think he's aged for a lot of the unrest in his soul is a nice way to say it. I blame the twin sons for a lot of what happens to Kenobi, Beru, and Owen. I really do. But I could get behind that and would love to see it maybe directly addressed head on in the High Republic book or something like that. It wouldn't seem fair to a Jedi or even just a Force attuned like, I have this great skill and it's taking years off my life. It just doesn't seem fair. You know?
Yeah. I think I'm intrigued by the idea that it would age certain species. I think before that, I go to some of the same age things that you're talking about. I think the dark side rots. Like, I think Palpatine is his body. It's not good for his teeth, right?
Yeah.
You can floss as much as you want when you're on the dark side, and there's still going to be some rotting. Mm. I think there's some the great kind of Kylo's like flesh becoming more mottled and tortured, you know, at moments. And I think obviously we know that the light side can exhaust, right? That you can kind of give your strength to it the way Luke does. So I think that there is some idea, different ideas, right? The dark side rots, you can exhaust yourself to the point of death, but then the aging, I think that's a thing that I'd be open to.
Mm.
You know, if we learn that, like, yeah, Aqualish force users, they get old real fast when they use a force lot. Like, if that'd be an interesting detail to me. And I think in the main thing I think about is I do just kind of like the idea that by galactic standards of a lot of other species that human lifespans are already a flash in the pan. So maybe like, some of those like Wookiees look over and go like, what happened to that human? Oh, it's just been 40 years. Okay.
I kind of like the idea that the humanoids in Star Wars are the ones get kicked on out of here faster. Seems right. Seems justified.
Yeah. 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 Is there any species that you have in mind of that would age better or worse based on force use?
Clearly, whatever Yoda, Yaddle, and Grogu are, has got the best of it. There's some gum or Maz Kanata, who I think is force attuned enough to, but not affected. It would seem. I would like to see. I don't have a specific one in mind. You know, I'd love to see Dugs. Get a little comeuppance. A lot of nasty Dugs out there, but a good force using Dug, you know, maybe reverse the curse.
Yeah, a Jedi mind trick where you wave a foot instead if you're a Dug sounds absolutely great.
Yeah, yeah.
So Bulba did win that race. Says
right.
That yeah. Yes. I like that a lot. Well, I feel like it's an interesting canon idea. I do think we're going to be talking about age a decent amount because of Obi-Wan. I am really content with the twin sons make a difference, and also like galactic travel is intriguing to me, right? Because
huge.
Things like, you know, do different, slightly different gravity, slightly different environment. I feel like there's so much room for fun headcanon about aging in Star Wars. You know, is it Boba Fett's looking a little rough for 41, 42? Is that Sarlacc juice?
Yeah, which is so funny because Tem looks great for his age now. I hope I look half as good as him when I reach his age. But yeah, in Star Wars, he looks how I used to think 40 was. You're growing up when I was like 20. Well, I'm 40. You're just pretty much dead. Yeah, Boba Fett, those twin sons. And that
he's,
life, and
he's doing great. Yep. He's doing great. Great, great question, Daniel. I'm hoping for some force-related age species canon in Star Wars. Any other thoughts on that one?
Well, yeah, you stumbled on something. We always talk about here, Force Center, the light side builds, dark side destroys, right? This big kind of overarching philosophy. You just stumbled on another great one. Light side sustains, dark side rots. There we go. Put it on a shirt.
There you go. A little bit of a just kind of a holistic healthcare advice from the Force. Yes. Moving on to our next question from Twitter. This comes to us from Gaz. Gaz says, as an avid canon junkie, whereby I enjoy reading all of the books and comics, looking back now, there is so much content already created that movie and TV series creators can mine from, such as how we're now seeing characters like Chrysanthemum and Cobb Vanth being brought to live action. What characters, locations, or continued stories are you most hoping to see being used and brought to the screen, such as Sloan, Dr. Aphra, Valance or Nal Hutta, Braca, Chandrila? Thank you for all of your content. As a longtime listener, I love your continued positive outlooks and fun approach to our mutual love of Star Wars. May the Force be with you. May the Force be with you, Gaz. This is a great question, a really fun question. We've looked a lot at specific characters that we want to show up, but I love how much this is being extended in this question to characters, places, and even storylines or concepts. So given all that, where do you go, Ken?
I want to go to some characters first, only because Gaz kind of reminded me, you know, I'm a big, we're all Ray Sloan fans here at Force Center, but I just, you know, especially when on the old Jedi Council days, I'd mention her a lot and want her to show up in other stories, shows up in Squadrons. And then I kind of just, you know, I don't know. After a while, you know, I feel hopeless. It's never going to happen. So I want to get back on that Ray Sloan train and say, I really want this character to show up in some other place and or season two, you know, run around during the Kenobi or she's during that time. You know, who knows who Ahsoka is going to run into on any further mission. So I really would love to see a live action version of Ray Sloan. And then I'll stick with,
I just want to jump in real quick on the Ray Sloan train. She came out swinging in, you know, early Disney Lucasfilm canon. And I feel like the fact that aftermath spoiler that she headed to, you know, the unknown regions, I think that means like we're waiting for that story. I think that the Ahsoka television series, there's a good chance, especially having Cobb Vanth show up, right?
Yeah.
That I think that gives me some amount of hope for Ray Sloan, particularly if it follows that model of, hey, we need this kind of character. Well, they already exist, right?
Yeah.
If any of Ahsoka's dealings are searching in the unknown regions for Ezra or Thrawn and she runs into Imperials, you already have that character.
Yeah. Yeah. And with a great mystery of what happened out there, what happened to Ray Sloan, and even throw in the Palpatine, the new stuff. We know that story. She's a giant place in that. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're going to say another person? I just wanted to jump in with some thoughts.
Absolutely. No, a couple more. I've been, you and I get on kicks, right? Like I want an Infest Nest TV show. She's already been live action. I know not to relate it to this question. And I'll talk about that for months. I'm back on a kick of Battlefront 2, Aiden Versio, Del Mico, Zay, Shriv, such a wonderful story, such a wonderful little world. So I want them, and that could lead to, do we go back to Vardos? Do we see Pileo in live action? I'd love to explore those characters. I don't think Rangers of the New Republic was going to include them. I don't think that show exists anymore, all those kind of things. Yeah, we've heard, but that would have been a place for characters like this. Zay's a little bit later in the timeline, I know, but it's a wonderful collection of characters with real life actors. All actors are real, it turns out. But actors, you know, mocap doing these video game performances, it's them, right? You don't have to go too far to find your Aiden Versio. Janina Gavankar is waiting. So I would love to see that.
Yeah, I think those are some very, very good selections. How are you feeling about Dr. Aphra? I kind of feel like, a series of some kind is coming. I know that there have been rumors and whispers and all that. But I feel like either, you know, live action or animation, I feel like we're maybe a year out from more Disney Plus shows being announced that are being developed right now. because like Lando is like the only thing kind of on the horizon that we don't know a lot about yet. And yeah. otherwise almost everything is kind of going to be out in the next year or so, right? Ahsoka yeah. and Kenobi and Bad Batch and unless there's something Akala, I'm forgetting,
yeah.
right?
We're
heading towards what is known, so more is going to be announced at some point. What are your hopes for Aphra?
I think it's a great character with a just a rabid, passionate following, and I'm in that crowd. Allows you to get to whether it be the killer droids, triple Z, you know, triple zero and BT, but Saina Staros is a great character that I'd love to see in live action too. So it just brings its own kind of Aphraverse, but she can also fit so well in other places. I think you got to get the tone right. You know, she's a very different kind of character in terms of tone and comedy. I think it works. Everything works. But, you know, you and I have discussed that. Sometimes is she too snarky for her own good? I don't think so. It depends on how you use the character. And I think her leading a series, I think it would be a vibrant, fun, different series. So, yeah, as far as animated versus live action, I would love to see it in live action.
Yeah, I kind of hope that she gets her own live action show. I think she would fit into the Mandoverse just fine. I think she'd be a fun character to pop up, you know, in lots of different stories, you know, depending on when Lando's set, you know, some scoundreling there would be yeah. great and fun. But I also just kind of feel like as a character, I hope, you know, sometimes when characters pop up in other people's story, you kind of can't do them full justice. It's
yeah.
Those characters don't have full wants or arcs, or sometimes I don't think this is going to happen with Aphra, but there's always that risk of something bad happens to them to inform the other character's arc, you know, and I just kind of want Aphra to have her own show that is about her.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's different ways. I mean, you're right. She plugs into so many eras. If you want to explore her adventures, you know, even her in college, you know, there's some great, you could do college years with her and Saina, Dede Dalla and her professor. They already touched on a little bit of that in the audio book. So there's a lot of different spots. And then, you know, we don't know her ending yet. So, you know, the new adventures of Dr. Aphra, you know, in a different time. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds great. For me, some characters from books and comics and video games. I'm still big on Singer Rathvalis from Aftermath
yep.
Series. He was one of my favorite characters. He's had some great kind of classic Star Wars scoundrel, rule breaker, bender, snarky, wry, you know, kind of his own worst enemy, you know,
yeah.
gets violent when he knows he shouldn't. So there's a lot that's just kind of like charming classic Star Wars about him. But this really interesting character path of walking away from the Empire and where he's left of working with Mon Mothma, you know, such a rich and interesting character idea on so many levels that I would be really happy to see him in the Mandoverse. A character who is in the comics a decent amount and is mentioned in books, and we know that she survived into the New Republic era, Evan Verlaine. We've
yeah.
talked about Evan quite a bit, the pilot of the surviving Y-Wing from A New Hope. So technically, she's on screen in that Y-Wing, if we follow yeah. canon. She's also a character that just carries lots of interesting ideas of this another surviving Alderaanian who has this, you know, very interesting, tortured, you know, relationship with Leia, the surviving monarch of her dead planet. I think I would love to see her pop up lots of places. Final one for me, I'm editing myself to just three characters. Jedi Fallen Order, you know, obviously there's a ton of desire to see all those characters. And like what you were saying with video games, are like, well, and they are the actors. So there you go. Easily cast. But Marin in particular. Again, because I love the Night Sisters. I would love to see them explored more on screen. This idea of the lone survivor for now. Never count the Night Sisters out with their dark magic. But great character, great actor. Love to see Marin.
I really, that whole, in fact, I saw a tweet the other day of like, make this a live action and had all the, Deborah Wilson and everybody, you know, Cal Kestis, forget his real name right now, but yeah, all of them just kind of up there. Yeah, they're there. It's right there. I'm right. And the Singer choice is great too. Singer's a great character. And, you know, I got to say props to Wendig. Aftermath series, you know, controversial. It's writing style. you know, not well received. Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of great things in there. But he created a bunch of characters that are still close to the hearts of many people. Or a character like Sloan didn't create the character, but added so much to her. So I love a lot of the stuff in those books.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Cobb Vanth is a big champ from that book for making the leap, the leap. So let's talk about places, storylines, or ideas. What do you have there?
Places, like I mentioned, Vardos and Pilio are interesting. And I don't need to, like, see a recreation of Luke on there with Delmico, but just at any point in time, it's a vault for the Emperor. So if Vader or Palpatine are around, and, you know, Vader gets sent to storage, go pick up my things from storage. You could have something there. Just, I love tapping into a little bit of that side of Palpatine.
What is the door code, my master? Force, Vader. It's the Force.
You only rented a 10 by 10. I can't fit this box in. You know, I think there's I love that side of it. Even going up to Rise of Skywalker, as maligned as some of those beats are, like, I like that he had a secret storage room in the throne room in the Death Star. You just didn't know. You know, but Palpatine carries his stuff around. The Sith history, studying it. He has his collections. The Lando stealing stuff from his ship in the comic run. I like that side of Palpatine more than I ever did. And you remember, I was a little upset early on of like, wait, you're telling me Battle of Endor, Palpatine was also worried about, like, weird occult things. And it's like, yeah, he was into because why wouldn't he? This is part of the dark evil side of his character and his nature, and trying to harness these kind of things for more power and greed and all those things. So I'm there for that. And Pilio could be a part of that. Vardos, and certainly jump in here on Pilio, Joseph, but like Vardos, just the you know, prior to Operation Center, it's like, it is this bustling Imperial center. And I've always liked that wrinkle in the Iden Versio character, daughter of the Empire, raised to believe it is all right and turning against that. And we do spend a lot of time on there, or at least get shades of it in the book, the Battlefront 2 book by Christy Golden. But to see it in live action, I think, would be a little different.
Yeah, I would love more time on Vardos. I think that's a really good pick, because it is I like it when we spend time on core worlds, because understandably we spend a lot of time on Inner Rim or Outer Rim worlds and people who feel sort of out of it. But I love the story of Vardos, of the Empire is bad. Yeah. Palpatine is a bad person, and he is causing tons of pain in the galaxy, but he's also causing pain to people who kind of maybe won't be believed, right? Or don't have a voice. And I love the picture of Vardos, of like a close planet where, from their perspective, the Empire isn't bringing the boot down as hard. And from their perspective, like, what's the problem? We're all quite wealthy. Everything works. You know, we kind of hear reports of this pain other places. We don't really believe it, right? And that's the great snapping point, sort of when Palpatine in his rage is like, yeah, them too. Put the boot down on them.
Yeah.
And Aiden's like, what? Wait. Then that's what breaks her, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which is valuable. Yeah, you know, maybe it shouldn't have gotten to that point, but I think that sometimes the way we all learn, if it doesn't happen to you, it's easy to ignore. It's just, unfortunately, a byproduct of being human, and you, maybe we're always trying to step over that obstacle. She does. It's a powerful moment. Yeah, so if you could tell that in another way.
Yeah, this is great choices. I think for me, some places, this is a weird one. The Jedi Temple. You know, we haven't spent much time there. But I really, I was thinking about the great question of seeing things in books and comics. It feels so familiar in books and comics to see scenes in the Jedi Temple once it's the Imperial Palace. Mm-hmm. Constant meetings with Palpatine between Vader and Thrawn and Mos Amita. Palpatine's just forever chatting with people there. So I would love to have a tour of the Imperial Palace in live action. I think there's the possibility of at least a glimpse in Kenobi. Not hanging my hat on it, but I have some hope for it. Another physical place I'd like to see is Ifrona, planet that basically got introduced by Charles Soule. We see it in the Rise of Kylo Ren comic book. It's, of course, where a bunch of our favorite Jedi from the High Republic have their base. But it's also just kind of got, from the little bit of art that we've seen in it, it's like the Star Wars planet that Wile E. Coyote would live on, you know?
Yes.
It's got a great aesthetic that's similar to other things in Star Wars, but it's just kind of a visually really fun planet. And I'd love to spend time for live action in that Ifrona temple that we see in action with the High Republic, and then we see in that Rise of Kylo Ren comic book, Luke and Kylo and Ben at that time, and Laura San Tekka all visiting.
Yeah. Ooh, great. Love that.
Yeah. And then for ideas, what do you have for ideas or storylines?
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's not a specific storyline, but it's definitely an idea and concept. I'd love to see more of kind of depressed bearded Han Solo. Love that aspect of Battlefront too.
It is a really weird one. I forgot the rationale, but it is pretty great.
Yeah, I love that. Generalized, I'll admit, but I really do, and I myself, and I determined this over the weekend, over the course of the weekend, with a hard seltzer in my hand, making tough decisions. Joseph, I was like, I think I really need to revisit Dooku Jedi Lost, and extend. I'd love to see an extension of some of young Dooku on the loose, young Dooku processing his life and making bigger decisions. There's something about that that I think is a valuable, could be a valuable chapter in the Star Wars story of a Jedi gone bad, and what that means. So I'd love a little bit more of that.
Yeah. No, I would really like to revisit Dooku Jedi Lost. We have the script book, so I'd really love to read the script book. I also feel like Dooku Jedi Lost was kind of part one, because it was like, I feel like it was Dooku Jedi Lost, and now we need Dooku Sith Found, because it really did. Obviously, his relationship with the dark side was covered, but this is really his decision to walk away from the Order and didn't fully get into his full embracing of the ways of the Sith.
Yeah.
The room there. For me, it's not really a storyline. It's an idea. And I think I'm fascinated by it, because I admit I'm even a little afraid of it. It'd have to be handled to me just like so carefully. In live action, we've talked about one of the tensions in Star Wars is kind of this tension between the fantastic and the realistic, right? Mm-hmm. Or the mythic and the really sensical, right? I like one great example of that is like, well, of course, Luke Skywalker is hidden with his own name at the same place that his father grew up, and his father's name is Anakin Skywalker, because it's a myth. It's the Skywalker family. It's not about, realism. And I feel like the movies and the TV shows generally kind of lean towards that. And then often the books and the comics, because they spend more time with the characters, kind of get into the realism, right? We talk a lot about you open up a Star Wars book and they drink coffee and go to the bathroom.
Right.
And can you imagine if Empire Strikes Back started out with Han's like, well, I got to get my morning coffee and then get a newspaper and, go to that part of the Falcon. Like that kind of realism, day to day realism is not always a part of on screen Star Wars. So all of that is to say, in the books and comics, we hear a lot about Hollows as entertainment, right? Like Hollows as books, movies, documentaries, reporters making documentaries, that idea of how does pop culture, how does read and viewed entertainment exist in Star Wars? And it's one of those things to me of like, you have to handle it just right. Cause, there to me is like, if you're already watching a character who's like a myth, right? Boba Fett is a myth, and he kind of gets into a certain amount of realism of like he's dealing with water taxes, but is that next level where it's, Book of Boba Fett, the second season, and it just starts with him and Fennec watching a hollow, and just like kicking back and like, this is my favorite. This is the Bounty Hunter 7. It's my favorite hollow, right? Like, it's intriguing because I love, like, there's a moment, I think, in Resistance Reborn, where they talk about Finn as a young kid, even in the First Order, being allowed to watch hollows with heroes, and that he kind of wanted to be one of those. So there's interesting moments like that, but how do you just make it not feel like, Boba Fett's now Homer Simpson just watching television,
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And even just the industry itself, you know, there's in that Poe Dameron comic, there's like a news journalist shows up and gets in, you know, involved with the fight. And I thought that was even intriguing. And we hear them, yeah. And you're right. Even Vat Weirdo, our lovely Vat Weirdo, Lalilu Primoc, just his history. I'm fascinated by that side of it because it's there. It's realistic. It rounds out the galaxy in a very fun, realistic way, I guess you'd say. Whereas Han Solo and his morning refresher. It's not as fun. Maybe for some. I don't know. So where could you, how could you work it in? And I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, I think it would either have to be just kind of a side detail or really be a, that's what the story is about, right? About mm-hmm. I guess we have dealt with it a little bit with like storytelling. We certainly are aware of storytelling in Star Wars. I think that mm-hmm. the sequel trilogy is so great with Rey thinking Luke Skywalker is a myth, and with the kids on Cantobite seeing how those kind of stories might start to pass. And it's just a matter of kind of moving that towards like actual hollow industry. So fascinating stuff. I'm not against it. I just think it has to be handled with great care. Great care.
It could be, you know, there's nothing as a stand-up comic. There's nothing I hate more than stand-up comedy in movies. Like it's never right. It's never right. It's always a little weird and off, even when it's nothing but comics in the cast. Like it's weird. So, you know, here's a Star Wars story about the movie industry. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, because it's all. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to stop myself from going down that road and keep this a reasonably length episode of Cues of the Force. Great question. Obviously took us to a lot of different places to think about what else we want to see in live action Star Wars. But for now, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our questions from our patrons on Patreon.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And And we are back for more questions and answers of the Force. We go to our questions from our patrons on Patreon now. First up, Will Culbertson. Will says, "Hey, Force Center folks. I've been thinking a lot about the concept of less is more and how it can be applied to storytelling. I want to take two big moments from recent Star Wars stories as examples, the Vader hallway sequence in Rogue One, and Din Djarin removing his helmet in the final episode of The Mandalorian Season 2. Both moments are already powerful as they are, but I've always wondered if the emotional impact was dulled a bit by some of the buildup to those moments. In Rogue One, we've already seen Vader twice before his reveal in the hallway. And we have already seen Din Djarin's face twice before he reveals it to Grogu. So my question is, if we had been given less of these previous character moments, would it have had more impact for you in those final reveals? Imagine being in the theater and having the first time we see Vader at the end of that dark hallway. And then imagine the first time we see Din's face to be the same moment he chooses to reveal it to his adopted son. I personally would have found even more enjoyment in these moments that way, but I would love to hear your thoughts on how it might have impacted you and why you think the storytellers chose to give us more instead of less in these instances. Thanks." All right, Ken, where do you go with this? Do you agree with the big picture, less is more, or where do you go?
I don't disagree with the idea behind this. How about that answer? And I'm hearing everything Will's saying, including that these moments are powerful and he enjoys them, but he was thinking about another way. The best example of something like this, of where I guess I would say I would agree with Will, is I would have loved more Leia in The Force Awakens, but the reveal of her on Takadana was perfect for me.
Mm.
And there are earlier scenes that they could have done that were written, and they are in the novel. And I think there's great stuff. I love the additional stuff in the novel, more with Corsella. You get a little bit more of that fleshed out. But to say, you know, and it happens, what, over 45 minutes or even, I don't know, close to an hour in the movie? I forget the actual time.
Pretty deep, yeah.
It's pretty deep, right? And but when she shows up, I just, at the end of the day, I really love that. And it was a big emotional impact, including the 3PO red arm joke, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's an example of, yeah, if she'd shown up earlier, it would have been great. Probably a big hero shot reveal, not unlike the one we got in Last Jedi, and claps and applause. But for her and Han to be reunited, and for us to be reunited with her and then them at that time, that's where it really works for me. So that's where I'll agree. Then I have, I don't know, I'll let you jump in there, but then I have thoughts on the Vader and Grogu stuff.
Yeah, me too. I totally get where this is coming from. I think that's always a great question to raise. This is the kind of conversations that I will certainly have when I'm writing and working with other partners is, you know, where do you have the most impact? I think the Leia thing is a great example, because where it's placed in the film, it, you know, it gives her the room to have her impact, you know, and it's really important to always be thinking about, you know, what is the impact of this specific moment. I think for me, my big picture reaction is I totally understand this question, this perspective. I think there are less is more moments that work. For these examples, I think that this is a case for me where escalation gives them value, where that we are building to an ultimate moment. I've definitely wondered this about Din's helmet, but I think when I break it down and think about it, and I suspect that we have perhaps similar thoughts, Ken, about the steps leading to kind of what one might think of as a sort of ultimate moment, that they are made more powerful by the steps. I'll just say for Vader, I think there's this tension. It worked on me incredibly well in my actual first screen of Rogue One.
Yeah,
I thought if Vader is going to be in the movie, I wanted to use the power of kind of modern filmmaking, modern action, to show me a Vader that is to be deeply feared. Let me mm-hmm. see what the rebels are truly up against. Let me see why they finally need go. You know, we need that Kenobi guy.
Yeah.
You know, at one point I had even wildly wrong about Rogue One, but had said like, it would be great if the end of the second act was Vader decimating a rebel force, and that's what makes, you know, Bail go, we're going to need Kenobi on this one, you know, and raise those stakes. But I think what's in the film is that tension of, is he going to explode into action, into the full threat of what he is? And I think the fact that we do see him first in a business meeting. Then we see him. Obviously, he does his choking, but that's, we have seen that before. And it's not a fight. It's just a reminder. It's a bit of an F you. And then we see him, you know, being called out and, you know, wanting to stop this. So I feel like for me, that moment is more powerful given the escalation that it's creating the desire. It's all I can't believe I'm gonna do this. It's a Vader strip tease, right? Like, you're gonna show me this, you're gonna show me this. Oh, you just went full Vader. You showed me, I saw it all, you know.
Actually, that's a great escalation. It's a great point. Sorry if I cutting you off. Are you still dancing down the hallway with the Vader?
No, those are my Vader thoughts. I want to hear your Vader thoughts, and then maybe we can get into our Din thoughts at the same time.
Having gone to a Star Wars burlesque show, you're not off base, Joseph. You're not off base. So I really agree with that. And I'll have to confess, this is one of those moments, you know, talking about the first viewing. I apparently had a short-term memory loss. Because Vader, the business meeting happens, and I was like, cool, Vader's castle. Oh, my God, I love that. Yeah, some of the lines are a little weird. I'll deal with that a little bit later, but I do like that he was there. And then I forgot. I just had no idea that Vader existed. And when Tarkin says, like, hey, alert Vader, we got some problems. We're going to Scarif. I was like, oh, that's right. He's still around there. So the hallway almost was a reveal for me. That's just because I'm a simple man. I think I just got so swept up in the story.
And for me, it was the total opposite. I was so hooked. I loved the castle, blown away by the castle. Great. Yeah, Mustafar, amazing. Ups and downs with the scenes, but I was still thrilled to see it. And then, like, if I was a more vocal theater goer when Tarkin was like, let's call Vader, I wanted to scream, thank you, please. It was like one of the only things. I was enjoying the film. I was watching it, but I was so caught up in wanting this. And I think that's the thing is, like, sometimes things need to be constructed to give audience room to want it and build up to it. So it doesn't just come out of left field. And that was my personal experience with Vader.
Yeah. So therefore that one worked a little bit more there. Yeah. Again, I don't want to remix just your escalation theme, but like, if he had whipped out the lightsaber and chopped 12 people in Krennic's party, you know, and then I wouldn't have wanted that compared to what we get later on. I think it flows nicely. Regarding the Grogu moment there, I think the Grogu moment works for me, and it does work for Will, to be, again, clear. He said this, just asking some important questions. But I think I was more surprised by the reveal at the end of season one with IG-11. I was surprised. Mm. They did that, and maybe they could have waited a little longer. I love it. In the end of the day, I think it flows nicely. But I remember even then going, wow. But I also think I want to acknowledge, you know, could you have waited longer? Maybe, but probably not, because you had jerks like me yelling that that's not even Pedro in there. So I think I'm part of the problem from back in season one, where I was like, it's a stunt man. How can I was and you know, and Jon Favreau does not know who I am, so no one was reacting to our words, my words, or any jerks like me. I just think it was obviously going to be in there. But all that to say, like, I took my breath away a little bit. Like, oh, we actually see him. And that meant that IG-11 moment, him taking his mask off in front of a droid, was almost equally as powerful, just not as sad. So in the end, though, I think when it comes to the Grogu one, I look for the trade-off. And maybe that's a lot of what Will's talking about here. If you subtract the things we got, is that a fair trade for me? And no, I like the moments we got before the Grogu reveal around Luke, especially chapter 7, right? With him having to take it off while undercover. That is such a powerful moment. So it works. Will's addressing the concern that you mentioned for all storytellers. When is the right time for a big reveal? And is the reveal for us? Or is it for the story, for the characters, or all of the above? And that's a delicate balance. But at the end of the day, the Grogu one, each helmet reveal had different value for me.
Yeah, I think that's my big picture thing. And I've kind of in agreement with Will in that I've asked myself this question of, even though I love both the reveals at the end of Mandalorian season two, both the one to get the information about Grogu and the one to share with Grogu. Like, I love them both, but are they too close together? Would it have been, you know, in some ways it feels like it's the ultimate thing for Din to take off the helmet for Grogu. And were those beats repetitive? And I had that sort of intellectual question.
Yeah.
And I realized that it was intellectual for me, in that emotionally, every helmet reveal worked. Yeah. So then it's interesting to, with this question to go like, okay, well, why does each one work? Even though like kind of on paper, like are those too similar? Are they too close together? Do they lose impact? And I think for me is the thing about, you can look at Din taking his helmet off lots of different ways from the, like, we hired Pedro Pascal. We'd like to show his face every once in a while. Right. But I think for Din, the reason that he keeps the helmet on is the creed, right?
Yeah.
So the taking the helmet off is a question of, will he change and how much will he change? Right. And the first time he removes the helmet, he is convinced by a droid to bend the rules of the creed to save his own life, right? Bend the rules or die. And he's like, okay, right?
Don't you tell anyone.
And don't you tell anyone, right? And then the droid dies valiantly anyway, you know, not that long after at all. And then the second time he is, it's a pressure point the entire episode, right? And he already bends a little bit of like, I have a helmet on. Is it about my Mandalorian helmet is my face, and that's what the only face anybody should ever see, or is it a helmet? Right. So he already bends it a little bit just to accomplish this, right?
Yeah.
But then I think when he takes it off to get the information, right, it is theoretically he is willing to break the code to save Grogu's life. But one could, I think, argue that he was tasked with a quest, as he tells every single breathing being that he meets in Mandalorian season 2, right?
Yeah.
He's on a quest to return Grogu to his people. So you could almost see Din standing in front of armor and saying, I had a choice between this part of the code and this part of the code.
Yeah.
And I was still holding up the code because I needed to complete my quest. He was a foundling in my care. I had to save him, and this was the only way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he was still arguably bending the code. So then the final one for me is the most emotional, has the most impact, because in my mind, there's no wiggle room on the code. He breaks the code for emotional connection only.
Right.
Grogu kind of asked to see his face. And in that moment, Din decided saying goodbye to this child and truly letting myself connect is openly and honestly with this child is more important to me than following the creed in this moment, you know? So I think that the fact that they're all different, and in my analysis, the first two are bending the code and the third snapping it and dealing with it later, makes them all an escalation.
Yeah, you mentioned the wiggle room, the lack of justification. There's no, the third one was the big one. Yeah, I can get behind that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I like now that we're paying it off, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, when he's talked to the armor, he's like, you know, yeah, no, people have. But it feels to me, let me ask you that. It feels to me that he is talking about the moment where he took the helmet off for Grogu. He's not like, I don't know, feel like he's saying like, I took it off like, 2.5 times, 1.75 times, you know?
One was a droid. One, they're all dead anyways. I think that in my mind, following your thoughts there, it that's the one that was the true reveal. It was his heart, right? He took mm-hmm. that helmet off his heart in that moment, and people around him. I absolutely think that is one. And he might not even factor the other people around him. It just might be Grogu, right? He's also did he never take the helmet off to drink soup in front of Grogu is the question too.
But he did, right?
I mean, he did. I'm trying to run through moments in my head.
But he not all the way. He did the half lift, right?
Half lift.
He did the but mouth expose.
Yeah. Again, there's people in the room. There's this Jedi. There's this beep and astromech droid. Yeah, I think this is the one. That's the one he's referring to more than the other ones, even though the other ones count.
Yeah. So I definitely can see a version of the Mandalorian where it would be, wow, we have two seasons and we finally see his face and he only does it to connect with the child. Like, I could get that, but I think there's something that feels honest to me about the character who is willing to change clearly, but is really struggling with how far to go. And now we're kind of back there. His mission, as we leave off, is heading into Mandalorian season 3 is to right that wrong. And I think we as the audience are kind of have this fun relationship of like, is that wrong? Was that a wrong thing to do? And I think most people are probably like, yeah, no, saying goodbye to your child and letting him touch your dad cheek. No, that was not wrong. But he's starting Mandalorian season 3. Like, I got to go to a devastated, dangerous planet to go to a mine and that might not exist, like, all because I did this. Stakes are nice and high.
All maybe a different conversation. All of that. I keep looking at the Armorer characters. One of the more interesting characters that we're going to hopefully spend some more time with on and making her tick and find out what brought her there, what she believes and what she will continue to believe. I'm really interested about Din versus the Armorer, not in a fight, not necessarily a physical fight, but just the two dueling philosophies, the Armorer and the rest of the Mandos, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that some really rich ideas have been set up. Anyway, great question, Will. This is really, really fun to talk about. Both of those sequence, the escalation, the less is more, all great ideas. Unless you have anything else, Ken, we're going to move on to our final question.
No. I'll put my helmet back on.
I'm always broadcasting in a helmet, just in case.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay. Kai Thatch says, hello, Force Center. In the Book of Boba Fett recap episode that we did, Jennifer talked about how everyone is probably slightly disappointed that Grogu did not choose the Jedi path because we don't get to see him wield a lightsaber. That made me wonder the question I posed to you. Do you think we'll get to see Grogu handle the darksaber? What scenario do you envision this happening? Perhaps he helps train Din to use it more effectively. That is extremely fun to visualize. What do you think about this one, Ken?
Okay, this is potentially juicy here. I mean, the true leader of Mandalore is Grogu right in front of us. Maybe he'll get that blade and hold it up high, and he'll be the one that. And that's why we don't see him much in the sequel trilogy. He's off, doing what Mandos do, just doing their own thing in the corner there.
He's just slicing down First Order ships on Mandalore. Yeah.
He's defending the Chiss Ascendancy against their enemies. It's the Grisk. That's what we've got going on. But no, Kai, it's juicy because Grogu has I would imagine some basic knowledge of what lightsabers are, number one, clearly. And even he kind of was like, you know, Luke gave him that choice. And I don't think Grogu was like, what? No, I don't want that. He was like, lightsaber Jedi way. Ooh, I think there's some weight there.
He makes little grabby hands, right? He's like, ooh, and he sort of kind of leans towards that and looks like, no choice.
It's like me in a toy aisle. Oh, Black Series Aura Sing. I must grab that. No, I can't. So he's got enough skills that I'd be curious to see if that develops at all. Even outside the question of the darksaber, just him and philosophy's training. Den's not training to be a Jedi, I know. But if he's like, hey, how do I use this? And Grogu's got some thoughts on what it means as his mind gets a little older and develops, I'd be curious to see some of that. I still think some of that could come from Ahsoka, maybe another source, Jason Syndulla. I don't know. but I just like the image of Grogu with the darksaber. That's just kind of a cool Star Wars look.
Yeah. I think my mind goes to a couple places with this. I think that, you know, Mandalorian season 3 is certainly set up to, like we were just talking about, to have, Din's got a lot of Mandalorian baggage on his plate, trying to get forgiveness from the armor and from the creed for having removed his helmet, but also the baggage of certainly Bo-Katan's like, well, I guess you're the leader of Mandalore or fight me.
Yeah.
You know, you're stuck with this thing that you don't want. We set up the idea that he is not clear on his conviction. So the darksaber, it's difficult for him to wield it. But I also think there's still this kind of dangling idea of what are the tenets of his clan of two with Grogu. Now that they've both really actively made the choice to be a clan of two, you know, what is their creed? And I think that might be interesting because I think Grogu not necessarily being like, I've been around lightsabers, let me give you some pointers, dad. But more that idea of like their relationship gives Din clarity about what he wants. Like, if it's a moment of needing to defend Grogu, this is clarity, make it easier to wield the darksaber, you know?
Yeah, well, we had the question, was it last week, about the purpose. The darksaber kind of responds to knowing your purpose. Yeah, there could be something in that.
Yeah. I also, I think that I had speculated, we had probably both speculated, hopefully responsibly in Mandalorian season two, that I would kind of like love to see Grogu helping Din with the Darksaber. Like there could be some like fun action slash comedy moments if Din is still having a hard time and it's dropping and Grogu gives him a little force push on the elbow or, you know, somebody smacks his dad and the hilt goes flying and, you know, Grogu picks it up with the force and throws it back to his dad. Like I'd love to see almost them kind of teaming up with the Darksaber.
Because look, Grogu's made a big decision, but the Force hasn't left him. And his connection to a lot of those things and those philosophies and things he's learned or known or believed or experienced. Yeah. And if Din is, you know, forget just taking off the helmet, but all takes off the helmet and is like, what do I do with this other than, you know, chop up my bounty targets? Like, what do I do with this?
Yeah. Besides going to the meat market. Yeah. And then also just like physically, I think Grogu needs to grow a little bit, right? Before he can.
Yes.
Physically hold like, right. Yeah. That seems a lot on his little hands.
Look, it's going to be hard for a lot of us to accept, but we are going to have to see preteen Grogu eventually. We're going to have to see a little bit of growth, a little bit of size change.
Yep, those first words will be Darksaber, mine. No. This is the final thing that I want to get a spin off from Kai's question, Ken. Depending on how long the story arc of Mandalorian is envisioned to be, would you be at all intrigued by like a season of The Mandalorian where the quest of the season is Din takes Grogu on a quest to find kyber crystals so Grogu can make his own saber?
Oh, I'd love that. His own kind of gathering. Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that'd be fun. And, you know, Ilum at that point is in a bit of a transition phase, but
yep. So that would be fun to see, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, you know, having some, probably not stormtroopers or leftover. I don't know. It'd be interesting. The growth of Grogu. And when, once he starts talking, like I really do want to get to that point. He's as cute as a button. I don't want to change that. It's sitcom kid, right? And we don't want suddenly he's now got a little mustache and he's learning about don't do drugs and stuff like, you know, very special episode of Mando. I'd love to see it. Cause I'd love to get just a little bit more. And I think we're getting, you know, the flashback going to that idea of home that's full of pain with the flashback and it's more than just who saved them. That's a fun reveal. I do want to see that. I do want to know that. But just, you know, where he came from and where does he go with all that? Once he starts talking, once he can start really saying, but not having to soak around to feel things and translate things, but actually go, hey, thoughts I have, me, or however he wants to speak, you know? I think he can go play. And so places like what you're saying there, his own little gathering or his own what he needs. Fascinating, potentially really fascinating.
Yeah, I think it could be really, really interesting to sort of complete a little character arc for him, depending on where Grogu ends up. But I want a whole season of every time Din Djarin meets anyone, him telling them, I am on a quest to take my child to find magic crystals for a laser sword.
Is it kind of like a jingle all the way, dad getting toys for his kid at Christmas thing going on?
It really, there's something about it. Like, okay, I went through that whole Mandalore thing. Now I'll help you with your business, son.
Yeah.
I love that. Like when my dad helped me buy my first car, it's a little easier for him. Yeah. A little easier. Well, those are questions and some answers, and if not answers, at least some thoughts from our perspective. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube. Thank you to all that watched our live Q&A episode with Alex and Molly Damon. It's still up there, and many people still watch the episode. More on the way. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can find us on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and a lot more. Just search, and we'll be there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Saw some people getting some Speculating Responsibly t-shirts this weekend. We appreciate that. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Always looking for new patrons. And from there, you can get into our Discord and have a wonderful conversation with Force Center friends. You can find me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. updating some comedy dates hopefully soon. But a big one on June 4th, if you're local to Los Angeles, going to be performing at Doug Weston's Troubadour. You know, me, Elton John, it's all the same. We're the same. I'm kidding. Not the same. But I'm looking forward to performing at that historic venue. You can get information on my website. And we always like to put out into the world some places of interest for charities or causes. And still on my mind, of course, in a lot of people's mind is the Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund by Global Giving. You can go to globalgiving.org/project/Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund and help just support the citizens over there who are in this humanitarian crisis. And that is a nice way of saying it. Joseph, what do you got?
Yeah, I want to continue to highlight the great organization Vote Forward. Just put very shortly, it is a place where you write letters sharing with other people why you vote and encouraging people to use their power to vote however they choose, but to be sure to engage to use that power. If you're interested, you can go to votefwd.org. And for myself, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out all of my other comedy adventures, past, present, and future on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Grogu, with any kind of lightsaber, this has been Questions of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.